So let's take a minute to look at God's word and see how maybe a passage can convey the conviction that we aspire to articulate in the way that we approach missions. And then Irv will join me and we'll have a conversation about those convictions and how they come to life in the context of our service here at Grace Church. Does that sound reasonable to everyone? All right. So why don't you open your Bibles to the epistle, the third letter of John. So 3 John. I arrived at Grace Church about 21 years ago. I had a similar experience to a number of those that I even meet today as they come through our membership process. While they still sing hymns is usually something that we all think when we come to Grace Church, and then we fall in love with that. The preaching is really good. Also, he can preach for a really long time. I remember thinking, gosh, he's and this was 21 years ago, he is old, and he is standing up there for an hour twice on Sunday mornings. That was amazing. And, of course, eating every bit of what I was served. The parking experience is sanctifying. I'm probably thinking that experience with what you also saw, that's Sunday mornings for us. But let me tell you what really struck me, and something that I didn't expect at all when I came to a new church, is what happens when a missionary comes to visit. It's almost hard to describe, and any of you who have spent time on this campus know what I'm talking about. I grew up at several different churches where typically a missionary was kind of on a bulletin board somewhere, said where they were. Maybe it had a map to show if you didn't know what that country was. And sometimes they'd come visit. They'd sit in the front row or pew of the church with their family, the missionary and his wife, and then the kids, usually lots of kids. And they were all kind of dressed alike because they were here to kind of be presented to the church and give an update. And then the service was over and you kind of awkwardly went and talked to them. The kids didn't really know what to say because they're overwhelmed or jet lagged. I had that a dozen times as a kid watching missionaries come through, and I had no relationship with them. That's how it felt. It just was. They lived somewhere else. They ministered somewhere else. They had basically a monetary connection to our church, and that was about it. And that's just not how it works at Grace Church, and I noticed that right away. Within my first months of attending, I saw what seemed to be a celebrity status develop whenever a missionary came back on furlough. But it wasn't celebrity like, ooh, ah, it was celebrity like, I can't wait to give them a hug. They got completely mobbed, and still to this day, greetings, hugs on a Sunday morning. Their calendars, as soon as people know that one of our missionaries is in town, it just fills up. Dinners and lunches and people having them in their homes, preaching invitations to our various Sunday school and fellowship groups. They come for respite, and they leave exhausted. And everyone believes that's the way it should be. That's just how we treat missionaries at this church. And so that was different from what I grew up seeing, and perhaps different from what you've seen or what you saw years ago when you were growing up in the church. I understand from our missionary families that it's one of the many examples of the way that they see and receive care from our church and our pastors, which is a real sweet reality. And so it begs the question, how did that happen? How does that happen? How can a pastor and an entire flock cultivate a love and a care for people that aren't normally here? You know, you don't see them on a regular basis. You don't have a relationship with them, so to speak. And so I've turned us to 3 John because I believe we can certainly learn from the example of our brother Gaius, who is mentioned here, in fact, who the letter is to, addressed to. So I'm going to start reading in verse 5 of 3 John, and we'll take a look at it before we get to our discussion with Irv. Verse 5 of 3 John, "Beloved, you are acting faithfully in whatever work you do for the brothers, and you are doing this though they are strangers, and they bore witness to your love before the church. You will do well to send them on their way in a manner worthy of God, for they went out for the sake of the name, receiving nothing from the Gentiles. Therefore, we ought to support such men so that they may be fellow workers with the truth." And we'll end there. Pastor John, in his commentary on this epistle, says, "Gaius no doubt gave the gospel preachers shelter, food, and perhaps money, meeting their needs even though they were strangers to him." An example of really faithful ministry. If you just jump up one from where we started in verse 4, John writes, "I have no greater joy than to hear that my children are walking in the truth." And really, and then this passage that we just read comes next. What John is essentially saying is, "I'm so glad you're spiritually thriving," right? Verse 4, "I'm so glad you're spiritually thriving. And here's how I can tell." The way that he knows that Gaius is thriving spiritually, that he is a true Christian, which is different from the false Christians that he addressed in 2 John, the true Christian, Gaius, is thriving because of the way he treats believers who are not necessarily part of his church. That was the only example given. The whole reason that John is saying he knows Gaius and knows of him and his work for the ministry is because of the way that he treated these believers that were these brothers who were strangers. So actually, this is a passage about how to treat brethren who are not part of the church on a regular basis, those who may not be known. And we can take a lot of other things from this passage, and for the sake of time, I'm going to resist the temptation to do a full exposition of it, but I think there are some general takeaways that we can look at. If you see in verse 5, the first thing that kind of comes to my mind is that faithful ministry is not limited to the pulpit. And I know that I'm preaching to the choir in this room and at this conference. And you're here not just because you believe that preaching is the only thing that changes lives, but it has to be backed up by other things, most commonly the way that you treat others and the ministry that you have to them. In the ESV, I had read from the LSB, the ESV, verse 5 says, "It is a faithful thing you do in all your efforts for these brothers." So it really encapsulates everything that you're doing, whether it's teaching or training or also just feeding them. All of your efforts for these brothers is an embodiment of your faithfulness. You are a faithful minister because of all of the things that you're doing. And I think it's important for us to recognize that if we lose sight of the fact that a pastor's ministry to missionaries or others, of course, the rest of your flock, stops at your preaching, then you've done very little to help encourage them. And so specifically, we see that he has this kind of almost unexpected hospitality, which is so sweet, right? So when you come to a place and you're a stranger and all of a sudden someone's bringing you food or offering you a place to stay, that totally changes your experience. It's a complete, unexpected surprise that this hospitality would be offered to you. And so we can learn that that was part of the way that he was walking in the truth. Verse 4. because it comes follows right after it, as we know that's important. But also because this is the basically it is the evidence of what John knew was true of this man's life. So things like 1 Peter 4:9 being hospitable, Hebrews 13:2 entertaining angels in your midst, Titus 2 godliness reflected by hospitality, all of these things kind of bring to mind that is very closely connected with what you would typically see in a ministry that's not just preaching. And it's important for us to recognize that. So for each of these, I just want some questions to ask yourself. Is your hospitality, your personal hospitality, so this I'm kind of directing right to you as a pastor, as a leader in the church, is your hospitality something that missionaries see in a very real way? And is it contagious? Would you say that as a result of the hospitality you practice to those who come to your church, and when they're visiting or if they're coming to be sent out or to fundraise, do others see you in a way that they can then emulate that example? Are you showing such hospitality that the church around you, your flock, your regular flock, knows that that's the way that they're to treat those people? If you had a goal, could it be that you would struggle to find time to see a missionary when they come to visit your church? Could you have a goal that the people of your church have watched you love on missionaries so much that they're doing that same thing and you can't seem to find a dinner evening with that missionary because you know that their calendar is full with the others that you have trained? So first is are you recognizing that role? If you work through to verse 6, that faithful ministry isn't limited to a pulpit. Second thing I see in this passage is that faithful ministry equips others to do the same. And that's kind of what we're getting at, that second note that I had there about are you helping people see the way that they are to serve their missionaries. But here's the other group that's impacted by that, the missionaries themselves. So a missionary that comes from a church that loves on them is going to go and establish a church that loves on the people that they are witnessing to in the field. You see, we've visited, and Dr. Busnitz will talk about this too, we've had opportunities to visit churches that were planted by men who went out from here, and it's interesting to see how similarly they look in a completely different culture, language, size, everything's different. But there's something similar. And a lot of that has to do with the hospitality that those missionaries show to the people that they're ministering to. They were loved in such a way, it says here, that they are bearing witness. They're speaking of it as they go out. They can't refrain from talking about this group of believers that is praying for this group that they're coming to serve. You wouldn't be able to separate those two truths. And so they went out in a way that was confident, and also confident that they'd face challenges but then still be supported back home when they needed a respite. So my question for you there, as we consider that verse, that are you doing well to send your missionaries on a journey in a manner that's worthy of God, of their calling? Are you equipping them? Are you caring for them in a way that when they get there, they know that they have your support, not just financial support, but they have everything they need? And that leads us to our third just comment on this passage in the last two verses we looked at, 7 and 8 here. So faithful ministry is not limited to a pulpit, and it equips others to also be faithful. Then faithful ministry also offers dependable support. You know, I would imagine that it was even more dangerous in those days for missionaries or for the strangers who were among them to be sent out, right? The roads were dangerous, and they had a message that the world didn't like. And still, that's the case. We know that the support was not coming from the Gentiles, right? Accepting nothing from the Gentiles. This allows you the opportunity to fill that gap. And again, I want to emphasize, we're not talking about finances in this seminar. We are talking about what is even more important for missionaries to thrive, which is the understanding that you see yourself as a fellow worker with them, that you're coming alongside them. Yes, they do need financial support, but they need so much more than that. Do you have an understanding, and this is kind of the check yourself part of this, do you have an understanding of the spiritual needs of your missionaries? Do you have enough specifics about them and their families that you could pray informed prayers on behalf of them? Do you know how and when to reach out to them? Because you know when there are kind of tough moments going on in the place they're ministering, and can you do that authentically and not just like it's something, a checklist that you're going down? So I'd love to do more for this passage, but I want to get us to more of a time for us to have a conversation together about the tactical. But this is, just to kind of summarize, this is our philosophy. Our understanding is that these men and their families are part of our church. They may go and plant another church and even become elders of that church, but that does not pull them out of this body. 1 Peter 5 talks about shepherding the flock before you. They are part of that flock. I don't think that there is anything that would suggest, because there's some technicality around membership, that those missionaries are not part of your church, even if they have another sending church. If you have decided to be a church that sponsors those missionaries, that wants to support the work that they're doing, then they are part of your church. And so we can't separate the way that we treat missionaries from the way that we treat the rest of the flock, which is to exhort and to admonish, to pray for them, to encourage them in all we do. And so that really has guided a lot of what we do and the way that we've set up things at Grace Church. So I'm going to ask Dr. Irv Buznitz to join me here. We're going to get rid of this podium so we don't have to look around it. And we'll have a little discussion. We also will probably have time to take some questions. So if there are questions that, look, I'm multitasking. Just so the recording knows, if I'm breathing heavy, it's because I was lifting something. Dr. Buznitz, we're going to pole vault under these chairs here. All right. I promised I wouldn't brag about this guy too much.
There's nothing to brag about.
So Dr. Buznitz, as many of you know, was part of the original leadership of the Master's Seminary, worked there for decades, serving most recently as a vice president there, and also taught for many years. And in his retirement has not slowed down much. But I think that our missionaries know you more as just one of our elders. And you've worked with missionaries really since you got to Grace Church. Is that right?
Yes, very, very much so. Traveling, mostly it started out by visiting seminary grads in their part of the world and so on, and beginning to see what they were doing and how they were surviving. And then out of that grew more and more involvement with ECHO and Ministry of Missions in different parts of the world.
You visited, there was one continent you said you had not yet visited missionaries on, you and Karen.
South Africa.
South
America.
South America. But almost every continent where we have missionaries, you've been able to see them. You've spent time in their homes.
Yes.
Can you talk a little bit about why that's so important to you?
Well, when you invite somebody into your home, you've invited them into your bosom, so to speak. It's amazing what will happen when you invite somebody into your home. And so we certainly tried to do that as a seminary family, as a couple, and then with our children. We wanted to have them in our home for a lot of different reasons, but we wanted them to see how we lived and what that would mean in terms of a relationship with them and their ministry on different parts of the world. So we just had a wonderful time inviting them into our home and thereby really schooling our children on what it's like to minister to missionaries. It was a great run. We had a wonderful time and so opportunity to travel to these different parts of the world to teach. Kind of grew out of the seminary classroom and then out of being involved with Grace Church. And yeah. It slowly developed and ballooned.
Yeah. So we, I think you're still doing it. You have missionaries staying with you this week.
We do.
So, so yeah, you haven't retired from that part. Just to give you the context, we have about 90 missionary families around the world, but there was a time when that number wasn't as high, and it was a little bit more manageable to get around. Now we have some focus areas where Dr. Busnitz and I focus on the Asia region, and other members of ECHO have different regions so that we make sure that we can still have that connection. So trying to take some notes from what we used to do when the group was smaller. We also get missionaries together every so often.
Yes.
So we traveled to Turkey this last summer and spent time together. I think there were about 500 to 600 people total that came to a missionary conference where we could spend some time.
Include all their children.
Yeah, the children.
And then a lot of volunteers that contributed to the wonderful relationship and wonderful time we had together.
Yeah, and you weren't the only one traveling. John did a lot of traveling for years to different places, leaving the pulpit often so that he could be with missionaries. And I would imagine there's some here who, you know, don't have, you know, a staff of men who could travel on their behalf, and they might need to do that. But John did it even though he did have people to go. Did you ever talk to him about why that was so important to him?
I don't know that I ever did talk to him about that, but he felt that was very important, and he would travel to, I think, almost every continent doing ministry, and some of it was maybe in the days before he came to Grace Church, but most of it occurred afterward as he built relationships with these seminary grads and then with their churches and their ministry groups in that part of the world.
Yeah. Yeah, and he would mention it in sermons, and his ability to recall specifics was always pretty impressive. So let's just kind of go through, and I get to interview a little bit. I set him up a little bit where I get to be the interviewer, and he'll respond. But these are things that we talked about beforehand. We want to make sure that we convey to you that we believe that this is essential for a church. This is not an extra thing that a church does. So if a church plant, if within the first year of planting, you don't have an understanding of how you're supporting global missions, then you may want to take account of that. So we want to kind of, but I have a feeling that because you came here, you agree with us on that. But getting then more technical, because supporting a missionary is a bit general, can you give maybe a little bit of your perspective on what it means to support a missionary?
Before I get there, let me run one. The title of this seminar is, or breakout session is, Shepherding from Afar. And I would suggest it can't be done. It can't be done. You need to be up close. You need to be involved in their lives. You have your finger on the pulse of their ministry, what they are doing, so that you can truly minister to them in times of a furlough, in times of a home assignment, times of their needing to come home and be a part of their extended family. That's where the ministry really takes place in terms of ministering to our missionaries. And so I know it's a bit of a misdirection here, but in a sense it can't be done. It needs to be up close and personal in the relationship. Now, what was the question?
So, yeah. then this is kind of something we kept coming back to was, and that has a lot to do with what it means to support a missionary.
Yeah.
So we were talking about what is supporting a missionary look like? And I think that was your cue up to,
yes,
you can't do it from afar.
I think there are basically three things in terms of ministering to your missionary families, and that would be prayer, share, and care, or prayer, care, and share. Prayer, obviously, in Acts 13, when they sent out Paul and Barnabas, they were involved in the ministry of their local church. They were in prayer at their local church, and out of the prayer time came then opportunity to minister in different parts of the world. But prayer became a very important thing. And not only when they are on the field, but before they ever go to the field, they need to be involved in prayer in their lives. So prayer, it becomes a very, very crucial thing there before they go, as well as after they've arrived there. Prayer needs to be a part of their time, very prominent part of their time. And then care. In a practical way, we require our missionary candidates to develop a 5- and 10-year plan before they ever go. They need to develop a plan. Over the next 5 years, what will you be doing? Over the next 10 years, what do you see yourself doing in that regard? So a 5- and 10-year plan. But there needs to be training before they go. Sometimes I think we kind of miss, we meaning in a broader sense, Echo and Grace Church, but in a broader sense, the missionary sending world, training before they go. You don't just parachute in a missionary family, say, well, you know, here it is. Wake up tomorrow and begin being a missionary. It just doesn't happen that way. One needs to spend time, train them. What does it look like to be a missionary, and how must one go about being a missionary? Developing all of that before they even go, so that when they do hit the ground running, they will be able and capable of giving themselves to the ministry, giving themselves to the work. I have a couple of other things here along that line, and that is that in terms of training, ongoing before they go as well as ongoing, and that is ministry to the family, ministry to their own family. It's difficult. You can't, if they're in ministry here, we say, well, it's just normal, they're involved in ministry, and we'll train them. But when they're traveling to other parts of the world, we need to train them for that as well. And so we need to be careful that we're preparing them in their marriage and in their parenting before they ever go, and then once they get to the field as well. So prayer, care, and share. And share would be my word for developing financial backing so that they are able to truly do the work and not give themselves, not be so concerned with where the next meal coming from, so on. So some of those things.
Once they're on the field, we do a lot, and there is quite a bit that we ask of our missionaries when they're preparing for the field that, that gets those things ready. But when they're away from us, it kind of becomes harder for us to see marriage, kids, how things are going. I recently read I was reading a biography of a pastor who was asked to submit every so often basically a ministry report, and he had the sense that it wasn't being read by the missions organization, and so he started sneaking things in that were would have concerned people if they read it. So, and sure enough, for 3 years he went from a state of depression to near suicidal, according to his ministry reports, and nobody called him. And so he confirmed that it wasn't being read. We don't ask for long essays from our missionaries, but we do have a few things that we do, some with just the ladies to make sure. I know both of our wives are involved in a group that meets monthly with missionary women, with missionary wives, and make sure that they check in. So just a virtual meeting. You hear a lot from wives that you may not hear in an update from the missionary, because the missionary is kind of talking about what's going on at the church and other things work that he's doing in the field. And then the home update kind of comes in the last 2 to 3 minutes of a conversation. Well, you can get a full hour with a mom talking about how her kids are doing, and so we use that. What are other examples of ways that we make sure that we have a good pulse on what's going on with them?
Well, I think with the Zoom calls that we have with our missionary wives, my wife and your wife, and so on, with the people on the field, I think we'll hear more that way than we might hear otherwise. Sometimes, you know, Ephesians 5 talks about the husband sanctifying the wife and pouring into the wife. We generally fail on that in terms of sending out missionaries, because we need to make sure that opportunity to minister to their wife takes place by the husband. Once a husband gets to the field, he gives himself to the ministry. And so in terms of the ministry, he's trying to bring about sanctification in the lives of those who are saved and growing in the Lord. But it's the wife, Ephesians 5, that needs to have that kind of backing and encouragement as well. And so I think that one needs to be very careful that one doesn't just... I'm married, and we're on the field, so check, got those things checked off. Well, that's not the total package.
We had the opportunity to meet with some of our missionaries this week, and this point was made several times in these discussions. I think what's interesting is, so as pastors, we know when someone takes a new job, just in your church, they need some extra care. How are things going? That's, you know, that could be a stressful time, or say that, you know, there's a big change in their lives, and you're checking in a lot. And a lot of times those check-ins are very specific about how's your marriage, how's your family, right? But sometimes we forget, because we get so excited about, you know, all the new people coming to their church, you know, on the field and other things and training centers being built and that sort of thing, that we forget that they're also just a Christian man leading their home during a time of change. And so that's a really important thing for us as pastors to remember, that them being members of the flock, that's something to make sure, in order to shepherd from afar, you get a good pulse. In that, Irv shared with one of our missionaries the 12
most important words in a marriage.
You want to say them? Because this is good for us. Now this is not part of really the topic of the seminar, but this needs to be said for us as men. Go ahead, Irv.
12 most important words in a marriage is, I am sorry, I was wrong, please forgive me. I love you. 12 most important words in a marriage. And that often carries over into ministry as well, where you show vulnerability that you're not always right. Sometimes your spouse is right.
Yeah, and sometimes it's just, it's asking really simple questions, like one that was asked in one of these meetings. Do you ever hold your wife's hand at church? Do you show affection? What does that look like? Because you almost become business partners in this endeavor when you're going onto the field, and you lose sight of that this is not just a business relationship. You're not two ships passing, and really caring, and it isn't until someone from outside of their marriage asks them that question. And if you are, and especially if you're ascending church and you are their pastor, not only do you have the right, but the responsibility to ask them those tough questions. And wouldn't it be interesting even if those are the questions you led with? Listen, I want to hear about how your church is growing. I want to hear about the tough things. I want to hear about how, you know, your visa situation. But first, I just want to hear about the time you've been spending with your wife, or even if we get more basic, or in scripture, not studying for a sermon, but feeding your own soul.
Well, and may I jump in there? Just that that's where visiting the field becomes so important, because a prayer letter, monthly prayer letter, bi-monthly, you can hide most anything. You want to present a good image to your supporters, to your home church, and so on. But when you go and spend time in their home, spending a few nights, a week with them in their home, you see the relationship of the wife to the husband to the wife. You see a relationship of the children, how the children are doing. And you get a much better, more accurate picture of their ministry and how they are doing. Finger on the pulse rather than just listening to a letter or even a Zoom call. Because there are certain things they don't want the home church to find out, because maybe they're struggling in their marriage or in their parenting or whatever. And so you need to be there. You need to go spend time with.
Yeah. And just a practical thing, and this isn't because we have deep pockets or anything like that, but our church has prioritized a budget for pastoral staff and even some others to travel to the field. It's part of our annual budget, so we would do it every year, not just once in a while, to get to the field and make sure that it's not the finances that are hindering, and it's not just, oh, we have a little extra. Maybe we send someone to Russia to see. No, this is baked in to the ongoing working budget of the church. So something to maybe consider for you guys.
I think it's very important that one does that. You need to make time for that, and you need to provide the finances to be able to do that. That will encourage them. When I traveled early on, our boys were on the younger side, and so my wife wouldn't travel with me. And I'd get to the field, and the wife, having worked with my wife in seminary wives here on campus before they moved, they would come to me and they would say, "You always send somebody for our husband, but you never send anybody for us wives." And out of that grew the promise to myself and to my wife that once our sons got to be in the middle of high school, let's say, we would invite maybe their group leader from church to come and spend a week or two while we went, so that my wife could go and be a part of ministry to the wife in the mission field that we were visiting. And it was very profitable, and I wouldn't go anywhere without my wife coming along. Had nothing really to do with my wife joining me on the trip. It had everything to do with ministering to the ladies on the field.
Yeah, and if anyone knows Karen, they know that she's an encouragement wherever she goes, and that was probably a good decision. This isn't one that I have on, but it's something I thought about just in terms of visiting. So we send short-term ministries teams to the field also as a matter of encouragement. So oftentimes it'll be to do a VBS or another project for a church on the field. What would you say the goal is of the reason? Because these are not inexpensive endeavors. So we send about 20 teams out every year. What would you say the goal is for doing
well
that?
To borrow the term holding the rope. Certainly, they want to get there and hold the rope for the missionary families and so on, but also just to pour into their lives, encouraging times amongst the international, the natives of that country, so that they can minister to, but also provide an example of that kind of a ministry. So a lot of them will do a vacation Bible school kind of a thing, or teaching, learning English, camp, an English camp, things of that nature. But just want to encourage the missionary family. And we only go to where we're invited. So we don't call up some missionary and say, you know, we have a team that would love to come. No, we wait until they ask of us, they could use a team doing this or that or the other, and then we'll try to put a team together.
Yeah. And I know there's some training for the leaders of each of those teams, and then one of the main things that Rodney, who oversees our missions here, what he says to them is, if you're not an encouragement to the family that's hosting you, then you haven't done your job. And so, it, you know, a lot of times I think churches say, let's go build a house in so-and-so or dig a well, or, you know, those things can be done locally. Our job, if we're going to send a piece of our church to the field, is to encourage our missionaries. That's our endeavor. We could do it a lot cheaper. We could send them money to dig a well and do that. But you cannot encourage missionaries by sending a check. So that's kind of one of the. You know, it's something to make sure of if you have teams that go out. I want to ask if there are any questions in the room. We have a few more that we've prepared, but I don't want to let the time go. Yes.
Right. That you really want to make sure you're getting done. It sounds like interacting with the wife and kids is huge. You know, is there anything else that you're wanting to see or observe?
Yeah. So for the purpose of the recording, the question is, when we're going on a trip, especially for those, you know, if it's a pastor and his wife going onto the field, what are the couple of things that you really want to accomplish with that trip to make sure that you're making the most of that time? It's a great, great question.
I think encouragement, I don't know how else to say it. I really think they are there. They feel being alone. And that's why, to run on a rabbit trail here, that's why we try not to send just one person into a new field. We don't want to parachute in somebody solo, but rather send at least two missionary families. For example, we've got the Bells and the Morrises in
Egypt.
So things like that. We have a family in Beijing, which initially we struggled at allowing him to go because he was going to go in all alone. But we were able to put in some safeguards and some protections and approve that departure. But those are the things we're trying to do, be an encouragement to them.
Yeah, one of the things is just what, you know, an itinerary might look like is to make sure you're there on a Sunday. It doesn't really make too much sense if you're going to travel, you know, if the weekend is your travel day, then you can't see everything coming together on a Sunday. If I attend a service, I'll make sure that I try to find the others, you know, if people who have emerged as leaders that I've heard of in the church. And just commend them and the missionary who's been doing that work. And, you know, I think just kind of making sure that they hear that there's that they know of the support, like we talked about the you know Third John support that's coming, and then always trying to and some of them really try hard not to let us do this, but treating them to something they would not normally have. It has to be part of the itinerary. So taking them to a restaurant, the whole family to a restaurant that they don't maybe wouldn't be part of their budget. They don't get to go, you know, and I don't want it to be like a Santa Claus, you know, is coming to town kind of experience. It's more that actually explicitly stating, I just wanted to do something nice for you because I love you so much and your family and making that a memorable time. So those are a couple of the things that, you know, I did have a missionary who asked me to get involved in a church discipline counseling thing. I prefer not to swoop in and do, that's real tricky. So you got to kind of stay away from those. You said you had one other question.
Well, so if a church doesn't have the finances or not yet to send people to the field, what are kind of the best ways? We can't really shepherd how we want to from afar, but is it phone calls? I mean, are there other ideas for really getting involved in their lives?
Well, it certainly could be phone calls. Can be letters as well, but I think it goes deeper than that. That one needs to find a way to go over there. If the missionary happens to be your daughter and son-in-law, most people will find the money. So it's yeah. Like okay, let's put this together and see if we can't find a way to do it. Maybe I'm getting off track here a little bit, but every 2 years we get together at a missions conference with all of our missionaries worldwide. And in a sense, they don't pay a dime for it. It's a part of their package of salary and so on, donations that are made into their account and so on. And we then siphon a bit off of the top of that to pay for the conference so that they can all come and not worry about not having the money to be there and so on. It's a little like taking a vacation from your home and paying the motel bills down the road away. So when you arrive, you're staying at a free hotel. Well, it's not really free, but it is. And you can have a wonderful ministry by doing that, and it leaves a mark, a phenomenal mark, on the missionaries.
Yeah, I'd be cognizant of when they're going to be stateside. Make sure you take advantage of that, whether it's for something organized or not. We did some things during COVID time when nobody could travel to various places that were somewhat helpful. You know, connecting with a video camera is good. Regular is the best because a one-time connection is just an update. A regular connection is walking together. So how is that going? Being able to say, like we talked about last time, this, how is that going? So that you can have an ongoing conversation.
So as you, if they're home on a home assignment or a furlough or whatever, you have them to your home. You build a relationship with them so that when you do the phone call, it's a lot more personal and beneficial because you've had them in your home. And your kids and their kids have played together and had a good time. And so relationship building. So when you do call, it's more meaningful and productive.
Yeah. Did I see your hand? Yeah.
If I may, just one observation and then the other question.
Sure.
Praise God for his work and the way you're reflecting his love in the way you're expressing the vital importance of missions. My sense is, probably you didn't know it all in the past year. The church I am blessed to be part of down in San Diego, it's taken us 30 years of growing the understanding of reflecting Christ, developing relationships.
Yeah.
And we want to share it just like you did.
Yeah.
And it's disarming them from the fear of failure and the fear of performance. But that doesn't mean you don't have a criteria and your performing because we perform for the king,
yeah.
the standard. But they don't want to feel like they're being evaluated in every aspect of their life. Check off the box. So to me, my wife, when we went to Turkey, she started listening to the younger children read to her. 15 years later, now they visit us going to Christian colleges because we cared to sit down at their level on a pillow and spend time with them.
Yeah, that's great. So, and I think one of the things...
You bring Christ, you bring yourself, and you love them. And they respond to that.
Yeah.
The other thing I would just quickly mention.
Sure.
The church needs missionaries. Not for what they do in the field. We need them coming back to our culture. They're imperfect, need salvation, growing in our sanctification like all of us. But because they're not a part of our culture, they keep me humble. They are closer to going to God in most cases than we are. We get so busy trying to fix things, organize things, run things, perform. They are alone. They can pull together if they have the right nurturing as a family. But they walk, I would suggest, many times closer to Jesus than we do, who know better.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have them. Yeah.
They love them across the patio.
Yeah. No, to have, and also to have them teach. You know, and that's one of the things, giving them a, you know, so thank you, appreciate that. Next.
So I know many of the expressions of love are going to be very similar, but do you have any words of wisdom about how to distinguish between being that sending church and being a supporting church?
Yeah, so it's actually one of the questions that we had prepped to Yeah, I don't see a big distinction between being the sending church and being a supporting church. In fact, I couldn't tell you of the list of 90 that are GMI, our group, which we're the sending church for and which we're not. We just know there are missionaries. And I think there is a particular responsibility for a sending church in terms of accountability for you know what's going on and the growth of that ministry abroad, and that's more functional. But in terms of the relational capital, it's to me, I don't see a difference between a sending church, any church that would have a relationship with that missionary, not a significant. You know, having more pastors' voices in the life of a missionary, never a bad thing. So,
I think I would like to add that there's ways to minister to a missionary family that they need to have. I was speaking at a missions conference in Spain for a different group and come to find out that a number of the missionary families had wayward children. And I came back with the incredible drive to find ways to bridge the gap for our missionary families and Grace Church. And so one would be sending their children here to go to camp with the group from Grace Church so that they would go to this camp together. When they got out of high school, we provide significant scholarship monies for them to go to the master's university so that they can have the type of training and schooling and friendships that have been built with the high school camp come right over into the college ministry and minister to them in a very significant way.
And we don't differentiate there if they're a Grace Church missionary or if they're a national partner that we have, we just kind of try to in many ways treat them all the same. So there is at the, and we could talk about this later if you wanted to have another conversation, but at the elder level, if we're the sending church, that we do have some things that just to ensure that, you know, those men that are on the field remain qualified per their ordination And that we do see that as a responsibility of ours. But in terms of the care, same. Yeah. Go ahead.
I had a question just in regards to some of the more closed countries.
And yes.
Specifically handle those.
Oh. That's a great question. Yeah, so the closed countries where if John MacArthur got on a plane and went, they would be concerned and it would blow their cover in a lot of ways. So those, we try to do more stateside trips for those missionaries as possible so that we can see them on our turf. Or finding, so we have some regional opportunities where, you know, maybe they can come to a more open country in their region. For instance, in Asia, we do a lot of our events in Manila because that's easy to get to, and a lot easier for us to then go meet them there. So trying to find those opportunities for in person. So do be cautious about as a pastor, if it's a closed country, it's not about your safety, it's about theirs, because yes, they're living in that country. So, yeah, great point. Thank you. Yeah, in the back there.
Any unique, if you have a single woman missionary, anything in particular to think special about how to provide care for them to be different without a husband and things like that? So
yeah.
So
we do have a couple. We have one that has been on the field, another two that are missionaries in training. We pray for a husband, and we really do, and that's part of our care for her, but we don't want that to hinder her from doing what she believes she's called to do, but we would never send her somewhere there is not another missionary family. That's the kind of become a unspoken rule, but it's just absolutely wisdom. We want her to be there with someone else. In the case of she's there with a team, which is really helpful. But in terms of, you know, going for visits and that sort of thing, same, you know, it would be the same as we've said, and then just making sure that elders' wives can connect with her very specifically, but really the closest connection would be with the wife of the other missionary that is there in country with her, and making sure that even pre-sending on, you know, pre-field, that connection is established and strong before we feel comfortable sending her out. We've come to the end of our time, I believe. I don't know what time the session starts. Is it at 3?
Is it
3:30? Take a couple more questions.
Sure.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
Like establishing like missionary care teams versus like the whole church.
So like a group of people who care for missionaries.
Dividing up amongst the elders or the people of the church forming care teams for specific missionaries versus just kind of encouraging the whole church to partake.
Yeah.
How do you work that?
Yeah, so fellowship groups.
Fellowship groups, which are Sunday school classes, okay. Fellowship groups are
already established groups.
Correct.
Yes, and they would adopt a missionary. So each fellowship group probably has about 3 or 4 missionaries that they really pay attention to. Those missionaries will come and give a specific update when they're stateside. That's kind of the group. Their social engagement is often part of that fellowship group, and the connection is to the leader of that fellowship group most often. It's helpful to have it as something that already is meeting and not another, it's just part, you want to make it part of the fabric of, exactly, yeah.
Does that drive the individuals from those groups do the field visits too?
Some of them will go on the short-term ministries, yes. That's a good question. So oftentimes you see if a short-term ministry team is being put together for a place where that fellowship group has already had a relationship with the missionary, most of the people who sign up are from that fellowship group. But we don't kind of we don't stipulate that.
Yeah.
We kind of leave it open to the whole church. Yeah. We'll stick around. And also, I'm just thinking about, we don't want this recording to go too long because they'll think that we talk too much. I want to thank you guys for coming.
Right.
We'll be praying for you and your missionaries that are connected with your church. Round of applause for Irv. Thank you, guys. Have a great afternoon.